This episode of the podcast is brought to you by my company, Horns of Odin. Now, with this week, we've got a really exciting announcement, and that is that on the 4th of December, we're going to be releasing the biggest ever clothing collection that we've ever done. The winter range is going to comprise of last year's winter jacket, we brought back in a brand new colour and added a really warm fleece lining to the inside. We've also got an amazing fisherman sweater. Alongside that, we've got a selection of t-shirts. They're all going to have a petroglyph style design. So we're going to have Odin riding Sleipnir. We're going to have Thor with his goats. We've got Frey and his boar. We've also got Freya and her cats. So for those that like things a little bit more simple, we're going to have a couple of t-shirts that are going to have a petroglyph style version of our logo on there. We've also got a selection of hats and scarves. So whatever you do, just check out the website on the 4th of December and you're going to see some amazing new products. And don't forget, the listeners of the podcast get an extra 10% off anything store-wide with the code HORNS10. So that's the code HORNS10, which will get you 10% off everything store-wide, including the new range. Hello and welcome to Nordic Mythology Podcast. I'm Daniel Farren, co-owner of the company Horns of Odin, and I'm joined, as always, by Dr. Matthias Nordvig.
Hello. So this time we are joined by Espen Hatleskog.
I'm so glad you knew how to say that. I've been trying to figure it out since I asked Espen to come on. I was like, fuck me, I'm glad I'd have to say the last name.
Well, you know, as a Dane, I probably screwed it up somehow. You know,
that's usually what we do.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, welcome, Espen. You're an Instagram personality. You're an ambassador for the Beard Struggle. And you're also somewhat of a photographer. You take pictures, at least, even though that you might not want me to say that he's a photographer, and then you also fly drones and take pictures of landscape with drones. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you for spending the time. You seem to be a busy man.
I'm always intrigued to talk to people. This is what life is all about. Expand your horizon or whatever.
Absolutely. I mean, before the show, seems we've got like the pretty much the face of Beard Struggle, and I had to make sure my beard was on point beforehand as well.
Oh shit, I actually had to shave my beard in November.
I know, I was a little disappointed when the camera came on. I was like, oh, where's that big beard gone?
Oh man, it's my DM is flooded. You shaved? It's like I betrayed everybody or something.
Did you lose any followers?
I hope not.
That sometimes happens. I had a good friend of mine who was he's like a male model. And when he got into a relationship, like his followers just dropped by like 3,000 or 4,000 or something. And he's like, as if that happens.
All the cheeks just disappeared.
That's it, yeah. Apparently so.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't exactly 100% voluntarily. It was for a surgery I was supposed to have in November. And you're not allowed to have a beard because bacteria and shit, and it's going to get close to wherever they're going to cut me. But the surgery got postponed till January, so I kind of shaved without any purpose for that. But now at least I'm prepared if I have to remove it all over again in January.
So can we ask what kind of surgery, I guess, maybe?
When I was born, I heard like a bi sound, a secondary sound from my heart. So I have like the main artery in my heart. It has like a narrow part, so it goes like this or some shit. And every 3 years or some shit, I've been in and out to the hospital just checking up, and I never had any issues with it. And I went into the hospital in March and did a CT scan, and they had seen it had increased or decreased rather. The passage through the artery. So I got a letter in the mail in the summer saying like, we want, most likely you have to do a surgery. So I got called in actually in October, but then the surgery would crash with that bear struggle shoot we're going to do in October. So I called and said, hey, yo, I can't do this shit. So it got postponed till November. And then I was supposed to go to on a shoot in Iceland with the bear struggle, but that got canceled. So I got the surgery got postponed till the end of November. And fuck, I traveled to Oslo and everything. And 5 minutes before the surgery, a lady comes in and says, they cannot fit me in the, what's it called? You know, the room you wake up in after you've been in knocked out.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so they sent me home and said, come back in January. I'm like, fuck, put me through all this shit for this.
Are they just going to put like a little coil in there or something, I guess, to open it up?
Yeah, but I don't understand why. And like, they do it differently, apparently. So I guess my place at the heart is kind of hard to get to because they actually have to cut me open. Wow. So yeah, it's going to be like 2 months and I'm not going to be able to do shit.
Wow.
But
I mean, it boggles my mind what science can do now, I guess. Just the fact that they can even do something like that, I think is so impressive.
Yeah, it's insane.
So I mean, I first sort of came across you was, I guess, your drone work, because your Instagram is Pilot Viking, I guess, for anybody that doesn't know you by your actual full name. So, I mean, some of your drone work and the landscapes are absolutely beautiful, and I guess you get a different perspective from there than a normal photographer would.
Yeah, definitely. I've always been interested in aviation, and the photography thing kind of came along later. The whole thing started with me. I actually lived in Florida and wanted to become a pilot. I went to flight school there, and it was when I moved back to Norway in 2014 or 2015. I just saw these, back then the drones were like shit. But I remember I was just like, fuck, I gotta get me one of those. And I bought one and just, it slowly took off from there. It was fairly new back then. It didn't really require any skill, or everybody was just excited to see something from the air. Mm-hmm. So I remember that was like what like kicked off my Instagram in the beginning. I had like 1,000 followers or some shit. And I had actually crashed my drone. So it was broken. The camera was like tilted and everything. Back then it was a GoPro camera you attached to the drone. And
oh, okay, so it wasn't a built-in one.
No, it was just like some shit. The GoPro camera. And the video I made was me and a friend hiked Preikestolen. I'm sure you know what mountain that is.
I do.
I don't. But
what? You don't know what Preikestolen is?
No.
Just everybody. Come should on, I? Man. Yeah, you should.
You definitely know when you've seen it. Like, yeah. Okay. When you see it, you would know it. Yeah.
Okay.
Have both of you seen Vikings?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, last scene of season 2, when Ragnar just became Earl or King or what the fuck he became, he's sitting on the top of a mountain that is like square out.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
That mountain is Preikestolen.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I live not too far from there, actually. And that's far from the point. The point is, I went up there with a broken drone and just did a simple video. I guess nobody had ever seen something like that. So that like blew up on Instagram and took me like fairly quick to 10,000 followers, and it just built upon there. I guess that's my journey into the drone world, and I got hooked on and tried to learn more and more on the photography side. So that's how it all started.
Yeah, I mean, Norway is such a beautiful landscape for drone work as well, I guess, because you get such a different view of all the hills and the mountains.
Yeah, for sure. It's insane around here. It's every year, me and my girlfriend is like trying to set up a road trip. Like, where should we go? But it's like, it's so hard to make a choice because there's so many epic places. And then you go and you look on Google Maps and oh fuck, it takes like 40 hours to drive up there. And that's not easy with the dog. So it's like, it takes like years to go through the whole country. And for some reason, I end up going to the same places because you might go to an epic spot, then you get back home and you see there's another epic spot like 5 minutes away.
I'm gonna have to add something here. As a Dane, and as somebody who takes a lot of road trips through a lot of mountains, and has also road trips through parts of Norway, it's because you Norwegians drive so slow, man.
Well, that's not Norwegians me, drive slow. I actually hate driving. It's the worst thing ever. So my girlfriend drives.
Oh, that's smart.
that's a good deal, and I can sit there on the phone and take Instagram stories of the mountains and all kinds of shit.
Nice.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say you mentioned your dog, who in his own right, I guess, is a bit of an Instagram celebrity.
Yeah, it's funny.
I think your dog has like 5 times more followers than we do as a business.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck's going on? I think your dog has more followers than Ina Selvik.
It's a pretty cool dog, though. I mean,
yeah, it's a cool dog. Maybe I should get him into collab with Ina Selvik.
You should definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, I mean, was that, I guess, is he called Fenrir?
I call him Fenris with the S okay. instead of the R, and that's just because it's easier to, like, say. It sounds okay, like yeah. weird to go and say Fenrir or Fenrir or whatever. It was just simpler to just say Fenris as a name. That's why I went with it instead of the authentic one, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, for Danish and Norwegian, Fenris is actually pretty authentic. That's that version of the name has been around for several centuries at this point. So okay. I think you're in the clear.
Yeah,
it's okay.
I was going to say, Matthias, I've seen both kind of written yeah. down. I was going to ask if there is a difference between the two.
No, so it's because the genitive S. So in Old Norse, Fenris Ulver, right? And that has been inherited into Danish and Norwegian. So we use that when we speak, like when we say that, like normally talking about Nordic mythology, and then you would say Fenris Ulver, and that's that, right? So it's sort of like become normalized in Danish and Norwegian. But yeah, his real name is Fenrir in Old Norse, but that's old. So
yeah, that's good.
I think it's fine.
I got kind of attacked for, like, a lot of people ask, like, why Fenris and not Fenrir? And I'm like, I don't know, man. It's just easier to say.
People always expect there to be some deep meaning behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I chose the name because of Norse mythology. Or else I could just call him, I don't know, Pluto or Felix or some shit.
Lex.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely suits the look, though, doesn't he?
Yeah. Although it's not exactly what the Vikings might have had, I guess. What kind of dog did they have? I did some research into it, and they did not have an Alaskan Malamute as I did. As I chose him mostly because he kind of, I wanted to get a polar dog, and I wanted to get a big dog. So that, and I looked into the personality and stuff, but I guess they had like Norwegian elk hound. Is that true?
I'm not entirely sure. I know of a few native breeds, right? So there's the Danish-Swedish forest dog, as it's called, which is, it looks like a little sausage. Like, it's not particularly Viking at all. I'm not entirely sure what kind of breeds they would have had. But also, we have to consider that a lot of the breeds that we know from Europe are fairly recent. They have been developed within a span of a few centuries, more than anything. So actually, I have very little knowledge about what types of dogs those Vikings might have had. Obviously...
I think I Googled it, and I think Norwegian elk hound is what they for most what had. No, that's the closest thing. I don't know if the breed has changed. I guess when did they domesticate the wolves? Is that like 10,000 years ago or some shit? I have no clue. But
more like 30,000.
Oh shit! Is that
yeah. The dog is like the oldest domesticated animal that we have. A lot of our sort of human dog evolution has actually gone parallel. So like, for instance, notice that your dog will have some white in the eye. That's probably a sort of a evolutionary trait that has come with the them living with humans. Because the white in the eye, you can use that to nonverbal communication, show, oh, there's something over there by simply like looking, right?
Yeah.
You can see that you're looking in that direction, for instance, in the dark and so on. That's at least one theory on why there, we have so much white in our eyes, and that dogs also have a little bit of it as opposed to their wolf cousins. So, yeah, no, there's a lot of we are very closely related, so to speak, humans and dogs.
It feels like it was a very good deal that they had between themselves, kind of, you know, the dogs got looked after if they warned us about bears or any other predators and didn't bite us, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, just think about it. Like, most dogs have incredibly amount of, like, expression in their face. You can see if they're worried, they're sad, they're, of course, if they're angry and so, if they're happy. You can see all of these things. Mm-hmm. This is, of course, something, again, that has, you know, developed alongside our very expressive faces, too.
Yeah.
As humans, like, we use our faces to express so many things all the time. The dogs do it, too.
I mean, I always personally wondered whether like Newfoundland dogs would have come from Scandinavia. I know obviously there's the idea that the Vikings went to kind of East Canada and that kind of area. Obviously, you get, I think, is Newfoundland the place where Leif Erikson went, Matthias?
Yeah, I mean, we have archaeological evidence of a Viking settlement at Lonsdale Meadows, which is like the northern part of Newfoundland.
So that's why I always wondered whether those dogs could have maybe come across or not, because they're quite big in like that Norwegian elk hound kind of way.
Yeah, I wouldn't know, man. Sorry.
The worst thing is Sarah, my wife, absolutely would know as well. I'm gonna have to ask her and then.
Yeah,
bring back on the next. So she was a dog groomer for the longest time and really studied up on dog breeds. So I'm gonna have to ask and find out.
Yeah, it's interesting.
My the extent of my knowledge when it comes to like Viking age dogs is that we have some from graves here and there, and those dogs. And this is just me riffing off my memory of like what I've seen in sort of like, you know, oddest renditions of like reconstructed graves and that kind of stuff. Those dogs are not particularly big. They're sort of like a medium sized dog. And the way that they have been given pelt is usually that it's a little fluffy. So the coat is like a little longer than, you know, the short haired dogs.
Hmm.
But yeah. That's the extent of my knowledge of like what kinds of dogs those Vikings would have had. So I guess we're coming to a point now where
we're gonna have to find that out.
Yeah, but also my knowledge is not just encompassing right here. We're like we're getting to the point where I'm not entirely sure.
Before the episode, I was telling Espen you knew everything. I was really bigging you up, and all you're doing is just embarrassing me now.
Sorry, man.
So I mean, I guess you always get this idea of like Vikings having these big wolves. That's like the typical image, though, isn't it? You get obviously like Odin and his wolves, and wolves are quite prominent in the mythology. So you would just kind of make that leap to everyday man having a wolf, like a
giant dog somewhere. Yeah,
yeah. When it might not be, it might just be like a little sausage dog.
I mean, I do like the idea of the little sausage dog.
The wolf thing in Norse mythology, where did that, like, I wonder, like, how that originated? What's the deal with that? Like, the Fenris wolf, and who is that first dude who just, yeah, there's this wolf, and blah, blah, blah. Like, how does this arises?
So, I mean, what we're seeing in Nordic mythology is that there are two animals, or two predatory animals that the Scandinavians have a lot of respect for. I mean, that's the bear and the wolf. And for obvious reasons, those would be some of the more problematic animals to have around in that time. Now, what we're also seeing is that, so we know the concept of berserker, all right? The berserker who are like these crazy warriors who who might be on drugs and I don't know what. Now that's a real original Scandinavian thought, so to speak. It's not something that has come in later on as an add-on to like the craziness of Vikings and how barbarian they are or something like that. People definitely did think that they could like source the power of the animal, the wolf or the bear, as something that they could take with them in battle and then be, you know, extra awesome warriors. So there's probably, we could probably like theorize that there would be like these cults dedicated to being a bear warrior or being a wolf warrior and so on. We have original words for that. Berserkir is one, then we have Ulfhyrna is another one. So it's very prevalent in Scandinavian thought in like the period from the 500s and up to the end of the Viking Age. And in the same way, we see the wolf also being sort of like a typical symbol of chaos, of basically the opposite of ordered and structured society. So you have the wolf that hangs out in the periphery of the village. It'll attack your sheep, right? It will be a menace to you as a person if you're like walking through the woods. You can risk that. Little Red Riding Hood, all that stuff, right? That's also part of this way of thinking about the wolf. And so the wolf slowly also becomes more of a negative being. And especially when Christianity is established, we see that, you know, the wolf takes on similar ideas as sort of like that, the beast and the devil that we are, you know, seeing from, you know, Christian culture. And so ultimately, the wolf also becomes negative. We have the same thing with the raven. The raven is consecutively like always associated with death and such things in warfare, in the early sources. But alongside with that association also comes positive aspects like wisdom and knowledge and so on, because you get a lot of that from the dead. Go to the underworld to get smart. Yeah. That's what Odin does, right? So in that sense, like it's not just a fully negative being, but once Christianity shows up, then the raven always just means death and oh shit's gonna happen. So that's how that's working out in Scandinavian folklore in general. But the wolf was probably a little more than just like a negative, scary being to those like Vikings back in the day. It was probably also a power that you could harness if you knew how to do it right. If you did the proper rituals and everything, and then you can take on that force, and you can bring it into war, and then you'd be a much more awesome warrior or something like that. So, but it's all over the place though.
Yeah,
was that? Is that in the Volsunga saga?
That's a great example.
Do they wear? That's the only one I know.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's always stuck with me. Is there's a scene in that? Are they in like a shack and they find the two wolf pelts, and it kind of merges with the skin almost. So it's not kind of like wearing it as a cloak, doesn't it? Kind of become.
Yeah. So this is a crucial point in the story where. What's his face and Sinfjotli? I'm forgetting the names. They've basically been excluded from society. They're living out in the forest in a den, and they are becoming more and more like wolves. So they're moving from being human to wolves, and they also, I think there's a scene where they fight each other even. And they're sort of like forgetting their humanity as they're doing this. And this is actually, if we go by the Danish scholar of religion, Jens Peter Schütz's theory on this story, the story is actually it follows a ritual pattern The ritual pattern is that you start in society as a young boy, and then you have to become a man and a warrior. And so you are excommunicated, so to speak. You're thrown out of society. You're put out there in the wilderness to fight, fend for your own, to go through different rituals. Obviously, if this was happening back in the day, then there would be some kind of like overseer, somebody who would make sure that they were safe while this was happening. But they would definitely be put to the test, physically, mentally, and so on, right? And as they're going through these rituals, these rituals are, of course, meant to harden them as warriors. And so that's why we then see this this situation where they're then living in a den as animals. They have to basically lose their humanity to come back later on to be reintegrated into society and become adult humans. And this is very standard for like rites of passage, as we see them in multiple cultures across the world. They have different ways of doing it and different ways of reasoning about it. But the whole idea is that you start out as like a young boy, for instance, and then you go to the wilderness, you go to the underworld, you go to that place out there that is basically the opposite of society. And there you learn the skills that you need to come back to be a responsible adult man. So that's probably, according to Schiff's theory on this story, that's probably what's happening here. And that's what the wolf is also being used for, as like an example of that antithesis to humanity. It's okay. It's the opposite of being human. But then once you have, you know, existed in that form, and you come back and you're reintegrated into society, then you have the capacity to act as a wolf if you need to, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So you take a little bit with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Like there's a little bit of that experience.
Don't they just put the wolf pelt on and just kill a bunch of men?
Fall asleep
and it comes off. Is that right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like they're like completely losing their ability to not be a predator at that point, which means also that they're probably going a little too far in what's happening here. Also, remember that this is a story that's written down long after Christianity, so there might also be sort of more of a Christian perspective to this. There's a lot of like old cultural material from before Christianity. But the Christian perspective is obviously that this is not a good thing.
I think the one that comes to mind is also Bjorn does it in Vikings, doesn't
he? Yeah,
I was
thinking about that.
He goes and kills the bear, but he also kills like what maybe the berserker, the big guy who's after him with the skin on.
Yeah, and by the way, there is also a Danish story from Saxo, the Danish historian. He gives us a story about how this one guy, there's a battle happening, and then we have this one guy, he's sleeping, and in the meantime, as he's sleeping, he is also fighting in the battle as a bear, and that's like the idea that the hugur, your mind can leave your body and then take the form of for instance an animal for instance a wolf or a bear, and then fight. And we see this throughout Scandinavian culture. Actually, this is something we find in sagas.
They stole that from Game of Thrones. I'm sure they do that in Game of Thrones. They like walk into other animals.
No, yeah, that's yeah, the Game of Thrones has definitely borrowed a couple of things here, but this
is that quite a common thought? I guess I never really heard of that before of like your mind leaving your body and going.
Yeah, no, this is a standard thing. This is the thing you do. So in pre-Christian society in Scandinavia, this was very common. This was something that that, you know, as I said, a warrior was expected to be able to do. At least if they were like those good awesome warriors. And mind you, there's a lot of magic involved in this too. There's a lot of ritualistic stuff. These people, keep in mind that these people would have like rituals for pretty much everything, right? They aren't like us where, you know, the whole world has become disenchanted and we're just like going to work and going home and sleeping and eating and all that stuff. These people, they would have like, if you were going on a boat, even you could be the most baddest ass Viking ever. You're going on a raid to England or something like that. You want to do ritual before you do that. Of course you do, because you want, you know, the gods to be with you. So you do that. In the same way, you do rituals before battle. You do rituals so that you can harness that power. And a very common idea was that, yeah, your body or your mind can leave your body, and then it can take the shape of the animal that reflects your personality. And this is called a fylgja. And then you can act in the world as a fylgja instead of the person you are.
Okay. So that is different to a berserker in a sense.
Well, it's probably the original idea behind the concept of berserker. This is probably what these Vikings might have believed in, actually. Then you see later stories where it's like, oh, it's just like they acted like wild mad dogs or crazy bears or something like that. That's sort of more the Christian version of it, because the Christians do not believe you can do this, of course. They actually consider this like one of the worst forms of witchcraft. Like taking on the shape of an animal, that's basically inverting God's law for the universe. So if you're doing that, then you're in league with the devil. And this is also, you see this throughout sort of like, it starts in the Middle East, it starts in with rejections of what we're seeing in the Egyptian religions and the area around where Christianity comes into existence, right, with Jesus and all that stuff. And then it moves into Greece and Rome, where they are rejecting these ideas. But these ideas actually get to exist for a very long time. Like even in northern Italy, like in like a couple of centuries ago, you would still have people who were like shamanic witches and stuff like that. They had no idea that they were doing something that the church didn't like. They only found that out when the Inquisition showed up.
Yeah.
So yeah, so this is a very common and widespread idea. You find all over Europe and plenty of other places. I mean, I think a lot of people are also familiar with, Native American ideas of spirit animals, right? That's a similar way of thinking that there's like an animal that sort of like represents your personality traits, and so if that's the case, then you can also take the shape of that animal in one way or another.
It's definitely fascinating.
It is for sure. Take the shape of an animal.
Yeah. Looks like you guys are getting ideas.
I'm thinking about it. I know. Espen, next time you're on top of a mountain with Fenris, just you can try it out.
Take the shape of a raven and just dive off the cliff.
I don't know.
I strongly advise against that. Don't try that at home.
Depends on the mushrooms you find up there, maybe.
Oh yeah, for sure. I guess.
Yeah, I definitely avoid them on top of a mountain, I guess. So, I mean, you were speaking about, just to go back to the drone stuff, because that's kind of what really fascinates me. Like I say, your drone footage is stunning. I mean, do you ever do like TV stuff, or is it not gone that far? For me, because when I look at it, it's really, for me, it's like top level stuff. I look at it and I think it's, you know, you seem to get a really good angle of stuff. And I just assume you could take that to the next level, or is that not something you'd necessarily choose to?
For TV, it's only been, that usually happens through TV, like different channels or whatever, licensing my footage. But I've never had like, hey, go out. Yeah, I've had one of those jobs. It was like a French travel, something that came here and shot something, and I was on board as a drone pilot. But that was more like a news type thing rather than it's not an episode of Vikings.
So, that's the one you want.
Well, if it ever came to that, I would be like kind of salty that I was on board as a drone pilot, because then it was like, I would be like, fuck, I'd rather be in the show.
Yeah, well,
should give me a lead character.
You have to get the beard back there.
Yeah, definitely. Shit. Hopefully it's back by May or some shit.
I mean, you mentioned beard struggle earlier, and obviously you do quite a lot of adverts. Those guys seem to have popped up out of nowhere this last year, seem to have really grown as a business.
Yeah.
How's that going to affect the acting appearances, I guess?
Well, before this, I wasn't really much in front of the camera. I was an extra on a couple of shows. I did that merely because it's fun and I wanted to learn and see how shit works. So I was on an episode of the Norseman, the Norwegian show. If you've seen that, it's like a comedy.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I was kind of. I just saw an ad on Facebook that they needed extras, and they were actually going to shoot some episodes on a village. It's not actually a Viking village. It's more from the Bronze Age, but it has the same vibe, I guess, which is in the village where my mom lives. So I was like, fuck, it's 5-minute walk, so I might as well just jump on this. So that was the first time I was an extra, which was it was fun. It was 12 hours, and we were like all the actors and a couple of extras around the table, and just that was like 12 hours for 10 seconds on TV.
That sounds cool. That actually reminded me of something that I saw in one of the Facebook groups the other day, was somebody saying how they watched Norsemen, and do people find it offensive? Like, I don't know what angle they were. I guess the angle was going for, like, do Scandinavians find it offensive because it's like taking the mickey out of Viking culture? And it's like, what? It's funny.
Yeah.
I didn't even think. I think it was like these, you know, some of these people take all this quite serious sometimes, and they were, you know, is it offensive to you know, to like the Viking community, this show? And it's like, no, it was made by Scandinavians. It's a really funny show.
You know, as a college educator, I often get like emails from, like, this could be like journalists or, you know, people in some kind of like official position where they're describing something Scandinavian, and then they're asking me to look it over to see if there's anything offensive in it. Because like last time it was somebody who emailed me about friluftsliv. So this is becoming a thing over here in the US, the Norwegian philosophy of, you know, going outside. It's like, okay, I guess that's a philosophy.
What's this?
Yeah. So basically, Scandinavians have the concept of friluftsliv, and it just means, like, literally the literal translation is free air life. And this means go take a walk in the woods, do winter bathing, you know, go skiing, sailing, whatever. Like, just be outside more than you're inside. Yeah, do stuff, right? And this, like, when this all comes through that funnel of like American interpretation, then it becomes like a philosophy of life, right? That you can like write books about, just like you can write books about hygge. And, you know, all these other things. And so somebody was like writing a little blurb about this, and they were asking me if there was like anything offensive in this, like, is this misrepresenting Scandinavian culture in any way? And I'm like, no, you're good. Because
I mean, it's not a bad way to live your life, just being active, I guess.
No, I mean, it is just about, yeah, being active. I think, you know, yeah, sure. Like, cultures definitely turn certain things into a more stable component of their culture. You know, friluftsliv is a very stable component of Scandinavian culture in general. You can find it in Denmark, you can find it in Norway, you can find it in Sweden, Finland, Iceland, and so on in different ways. But it's not like it's special to Scandinavian culture. Like you can also go to Germany and find it, or the UK, or
I don't know about that over here. We seem to be getting worse.
Well, I think everybody's getting worse, also in Scandinavia, but that's when then this kind of stuff becomes like a, you know, a philosophy.
It seems like it's two-sided. Either people hate it or they love it.
Yeah,
the whole, like, absolutely. Being outside and hiking and eating chocolate in the mountains and drinking hot coffee or whatever. You have the city people who likes to listen to ambulances every day and inhale exhaust
and sit in a club going unch, unch, unch. I know these people.
I think the outside is definitely better than the city life. Like whenever we have to go down to London, it's just not for me.
Oh, you,
like,
guys that, drive that, on the wrong side of the road too, so that's fucked up.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
Oh my god,
we drive on the correct side of the road.
No, you don't. You, Japan, actually, Australia, everybody else
changed it.
Let me just be an annoying historian here for a second. Yes, actually, the English do drive on the right side of the road, and we drive on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah. Isn't it to do with carrying your sword in your right side when you're riding a horse?
That is the English reasoning. You know, so when you're on your highway, right, and somebody comes at you, you want to be able to, you know, defend yourself with your sword. And that's why you're on the left side instead of the right side. Because if you're on the right side and you're riding your horse, then you'd have to like reach over, right? Reach over the horse and everything to poke at the guy who's coming at you.
How did this change, though? Was it the Christians who wanted to drive on the other side? We're so nice.
No, it was I don't know exactly why. I mean, Google Sweden, by the way, in the 1970s when they changed to driving on the right side.
Oh, I bet that was a nightmare.
Oh, yeah, that's like the.
Yeah, that seems like a nightmare if you just change it for a group of people who are used to one way. It must be like
they changed it back in the 1970s, and it's like you can find these amazing pictures of like everybody like being like all over the place. Or maybe it was earlier. I can't remember exactly, but they changed it very recently in history. So. There's some beautiful pictures of that. Just like major chaos.
See, I always find it quite weird how you guys can turn. Is it turn right on a red light? Whereas like a red light for us is just
stop.
You're stuck there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't go. Whereas I'm sure you guys, can you go right on a red light? Or have I just been
not in Europe? The law?
America.
Oh, okay. Is that in America?
Yeah,
I think I might have done that when I was in Norway. So
I did that when I moved back from the States. I just did. Oh, okay. Like, my mind was just, and then I just drove on a red light. I was like, "Fuck, is that allowed here?"
Well, apparently not, but I'm sure I did it as well.
Yeah, no, this is something I have to like keep in mind. Like when I'm driving in Europe, it's like, yeah, you can't do that. I mean, there's some places here in the US you can't. Also in roundabouts here in the US, you use the blinker for the opposite thing as you would in Europe. Like, so when you get into a roundabout, right, and you get to your exit from the roundabout, that's when you would use your blinker to turn right. Right. But here in the US, you turn your blinker on before you get into the roundabout to indicate which direction you're going out of it. So if I'm going out on the left side over here, then I turn my blinker on from the left side to go up. And it's kind of confusing, but nobody knows how to use the roundabout here anyway. So it's kind of fun.
So you don't have that many of them.
I think I saw like one when I lived there.
Exactly. And that's the same thing here. Like in Colorado, I know of one. So, and everybody's always confused about it.
I've probably got like two on my street alone.
Yeah, I know. Like England,
we love them in England.
Yeah, they're fucking everywhere. Country of them.
we definitely love roundabouts. Espen, before we started this, you were telling me about how was it for Beer Struggle as well that you were shooting at Harold Finehair's camp, was it, or something? What was it?
In Valsnes in Haugesund, there is Harald Fein. Is it fine hair or fair hair? What can you choose?
Both of them. They work fine, both of them. I think mostly they say fine hair.
Yeah.
In English.
Yeah, so he has, there's a farm outside of, in Haugesund. And Avaldsnes. So we contacted them and used that place to shoot the Bearsfield commercials. That place is epic as fuck because it's so authentic. That was like one thing I'm kind of curious of because you have Harald and you also have like the Black Viking. I actually heard there was supposed to be a TV show about that, but then I haven't heard anything more about it. That would be interesting as hell.
A Black Viking?
Yeah, as opposed to have like Mongolian heritage or something, which has makes him darker skin or something. But I don't know much about the history about it. I just did a quick Google search when I saw there was supposed to be a TV show about it. And I was like, the Black Viking, who's that? And apparently, he traveled to Iceland and settled there or something.
Yeah, Gunnar. I think his name was Gunnar Heljaskin. So Heljaskin means like the hell skin, basically. The theory is that that's like because he was dark.
Yeah. But it wasn't like how dark was he? It wasn't like Lil Wayne dark. It was more.
I don't know. That's so there is a like a handful of references to dark skin throughout the Old Norse literary material. In different ways, talking about somebody who had like darkened skin, or you know, usually it comes in like you know some kind of nickname. So for instance, Heljaskin. There was like I think we have a total of like 15 words that suggest somebody had some darker skin, and. Yeah, usually the theories have gone in the direction of like, oh, these must be some peoples who have come from the Asian area, right? So, you know, go to Central Asia, which the Vikings did on, you know, very frequently. There you can find, you know, people of Asian descent who have darker skin than the Scandinavians, and they would probably... You know, refers to them if they came back with them as darkened skin. But you know, we have a couple of instances of people from the Middle East in Scandinavia. Like one of the women in the Osebek ship, she seems to have come from Iran.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I mean, that day you could also find darker skin than you know Scandinavians.
Yeah.
It's not impossible at all that people from Northern Africa have found their way up to Scandinavia. I mean, there's plenty of Moroccans and later on in history in the 1600s that had a field day raiding the Scandinavian shores and taking slaves. So,
yeah.
You know, that could easily have happened back then as well.
Mateus, one thing I heard was... The kind of in the Roman Empire, they would move people around the empire to keep things unsettled. So they would take people from one side of the empire who were maybe in troublemakers and put them all the way on the other side to kind of like you know, so they couldn't find their way back home. But is there any truth to that? Is that kind of like something? Because that I was just thinking that might explain like how you would get these different skin tones or skin colors across different areas. Like you might have. The odd person or the odd family maybe from North mm-hmm. Africa up all the way in Scandinavia.
Okay, so we talked just before we started this episode, we talked about the possibility of pissing people off. This is one of the subjects that that pisses people off, especially the more racist inclined types out there who want to deny the possibility of you know people who aren't as pasty as me. Having existed in Europe before yesterday, this happened. This happened in the Roman Empire. There was definitely they would sometimes move entire populations for different reasons. But we also have, of course, the one of the most globalized aspects of the Roman Empire was the army. And they would be enlisting people from all over the place, mercenaries, also using certain, like one of the things that was curious about the Romans is that they preferred I mean, it's not like the Romans couldn't ride horses, but they preferred to have other people ride horses. So they would enlist like Scythians or Syrians or, you know, different kinds of people to be the cavalry. And they could come from a lot of different places. And of course, also, you know, with the basic infantry, mercenaries from all kinds of places. This is one of the reasons that, you know, we have so much communication between Scandinavia and the Roman Empire from the year zero and onwards. That so many people from Scandinavia, Germanic warriors, would go and enlist as mercenaries in the Roman army and then get properly trained and come back and kick ass in Scandinavia and become king. that's how you do it. That's what the Sigurd, the Dragon Slayer story is really about. You know, going out there, getting rich, getting all the women, and then come back and being king, right? That's the story that they like to tell. So yeah, no, it's very very likely that you would find probably not a lot, but definitely darker skinned individuals from Northern Africa, from the Middle East, maybe even a Nubian here and there in England. During Roman times, absolutely. Here's a funny thing: in Scandinavia, there is a, or in the Old Norse material, there is actually a giantess, a jötun, known as Sleipadr. That means leopard. So, at some point, there would be some Scandinavian who picked up what a leopard was somewhere farther south, and then mm-hmm. that turned into a mythological creature in Scandinavian mythology.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So there's definitely some mix. There's definitely been something going on here, and you know, Rome as an empire was a very globalized concoction, so to speak. There was a lot of back and forth and in and out and so on. So yeah, it's definitely not impossible. Also, when we go to the first centuries AD, we have temples to Isis and to Mithras in the German area, in what is now the Rhineland area. Isis is an Egyptian goddess and Mithras is a Persian god. So yeah, there's definitely some crossover, but obviously not at the same level as later times.
So, I mean, Espen was mentioning like one particular guy, I guess, who's maybe got some sort of notoriety. Is there any stories behind that? I mean, I personally hope they do make the TV show just to watch all the Viking bros just collapse on Facebook. Like, that will become my favorite thing to watch, because you can imagine the outrage that will come from that.
Yeah, so I mean, as far as I remember, the story about Gunnar Helgason is sort of more like a side story. I must admit I haven't read it for a very long time, so it's not, you know, you would have to build up a lot of a narrative around it. But I mean, that's not a problem at all. You can create whatever interesting story. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, then all of a sudden I prophesied this, that once this show then comes out, we are going to see a lot of those Viking bros getting all like up in the historical accuracy of all of this to try to disprove anything about it. That's usually how it goes, right?
Yeah, of course. Even on Vikings, people go mental over that shit.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I also wish Vikings was a little bit more historically correct in the history wise. I don't really care too much about that like the costumes and shit get a lot of hate. Mm-hmm. But I'm more worried about like the history behind it. It would be cool if that made more sense. Not that I know a lot of the history, but just like I got kind of disappointed in Vikings where they like choose who's going to become the first king of Norway. And like here where I live, there's like three big swords in a rock that represents the battle of Hafrsfjord. And in the show, they just sat around the table like it was fucking like the presidency of America. Like, okay, I vote him and I vote him. And then it's over. It would be cool if it was like a big ass fucking battle.
Yeah, no, and that's like one of the most epic battles. Like, come on, guys. That's a fail, a massive fail.
Yeah.
Of course, you should have had that epic battle. Like, come on.
it's probably a budget thing, I imagine.
Don't they have budget by now, though? Like, all
you
of
would,
it.
Yeah, well, there was a later episode, wasn't it? So you would have thought they would have enough of a budget to.
But I mean, there's been some people quipping here and there in the blogosphere about how, you know, the show has been losing traction. So maybe their budget isn't as big as it used to be. Like maybe some investors have pulled out. But, you know,
I mean, I just wanted to ask about the battle itself. Historically wise, I mean, why not? Let's speak a little bit about it and tell the story about how you got the first king of Norway.
Go on, Espen.
I don't know much more than that battle. I mean, unified Norway under one crown and became the first king of Norway, and there was a battle out in Hafrsfjord. What the hell is the year? 872? No, shit, I don't know.
Yeah, 871, 72, around that time. I can't remember exactly. So you're gonna get the critical historian version, and that is the rundown is there's a Harald Finehair. He manages to gather enough allies to beat the more problematic elements of like local petty kings or chieftains or whatever you want to call them in the is sort of more of like so we have his rule. Historically, what it looks like is that Harald, he inherits Sokn from his maternal grandfather, as far as I remember, and then he has the area around Bergen as well. That's sort of like the core area for him. His seat of power, and then he to some extent manages to wield power over Aqdaq and the southern parts of the west coast, but probably not Viken. Viken looks like it's actually under some kind of like Danish king's rule for most of the Viking age until Harald Hardruler, who manages to break Danish influence there. And then what Harald needs to do is that he needs to rein in those chieftains up north, especially the Trøndelag and Møre chieftains. They're the worst ones. Like it's like throughout the Norwegian king's sagas, they're always the ones making trouble or being an issue somehow. So this starts with Harald. That's really what the battle is about, his hegemony in that sort of like more northerly portion of the country. But the question is really, does he actually manage to create a unified Norway? That's, of course, you know, now I'm going to like, we will soon be hearing the Norwegians sharpening the pitchforks coming after me now. Because he probably didn't. He probably didn't manage to create a particularly coherent kingdom. Mm. There's a lot of sort of his dynasty that seems, when you look at the literature around it, the king's sagas, but also the skaldic poetry and so, there's a lot of it that seems, you know, kind of constructed. It seems like it's that these pedigrees, they can't be verified that well. And what we're also seeing is that, you know, that area around Trondheim, which is called Nidaros at the time, that seems very independent throughout the Viking Age. And mm. what we have is a really powerful kingdom in with like Bergen as its center, so in that Vestlandet area in general, there's a very powerful kingdom. But this very powerful kingdom only sometimes wields its power over the north central Norwegian area, and only sometimes wields its power over the eastern parts where Oslo is and down south in Viken, in the Viking Age. And it's only like with Magnus the Good. Like Magnus the Good, he's the one who manages to solidify Norwegian hegemony or Western Norwegian hegemony as a kingdom. He builds.
He sounds like a nice man.
Yeah, well, he was even king of Denmark for a while, right?
He sounds like I want him to be my king.
Yeah, no. He conquered Denmark, and we still call him Magnus the Good. So yeah.
Magnus the Good.
Yeah.
And that's better than Hard Ruler. Like, I feel like he was just a twat.
He was a jerk.
That sounds like, more badass, though. What kind of legacy is that? Espen the Good guy.
I mean, if it was going to be my name, I wouldn't choose Daniel the Good. I would choose, like, Daniel Hard Ruler. But, like, to live under, I would definitely want the good one.
I mean, you know, I think it's better to be a nice king than to be a jerk-off king. Like, come on.
Yeah, it's better to be a Ragnar than an Ivar.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. That's it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, what's the story behind, like, Harald Finehair's name? I don't think we ever spoke about this, and I want to know.
Yeah, so the legend is that he said that he would not cut his hair until he had conquered all of Norway. I did a similar thing back when I was before I was admitted to the PhD program at Aarhus University. I said, I won't cut my hair until I've graduated my PhD, and I didn't. So there's some really really goofy pictures
out there. there we go.
But so actually the interesting thing is that this idea of like growing your hair long until some kind of rite of passage, that seems like a very ancient Scandinavian idea. So we know it from Tacitus, the Roman historian who writes about the Swabians in particular, a Germanic tribe. He says that they tie their long hair up in a knot. And then they only cut it off once they've killed their first enemy, sort of as like a rite of passage. Okay. Those we have archaeological evidence of these Swabian knots. They are found actually in what is now northern Germany and would have been southern Denmark in like the Viking Age. So it's not impossible that when Harald Finehair made this vow that he wouldn't cut his hair until he had conquered all of Norway, that that's actually like a very ancient tradition of some kind of like idea that you grow your hair long until you can like become a man. So I guess that was becoming a man for him, conquering
Norway. Do you think maybe he just got fed up of it in the end? He was like, you know, I've done it, I've conquered Norway. And anybody who said he hadn't, he was like, just got rid of them. Like no one dared to question him anymore. So that's why we now think that he was the first king.
Maybe. I mean,
really, he just wanted to cut his hair.
You know, I mean, the victory in Hafrsfjord definitely set a precedent where, you know, so back then it would be the way that this would work was that a king had to go and get ratified at the General Assembly. So he would have to go, regardless of how much he felt like he was a king, right? He would have to go to Møre and be like voted in as king by the like aristocracy that existed there.
The voting thing kind of from Vikings isn't totally made up.
It's not totally made up, but you know, we're dealing with like this fragile balance between somebody who wants to be king and rule supreme and then other, you know, more or less powerful families, right? And the way that you manage to sort of like retain power as a king in the Viking Age is that you either make sure to strike deals with these other powerful families so that they get what they want, basically, or the next best thing, depending on how many warriors you have behind you. Or you break up their land holdings. And that's probably what created a lot of the migration to Iceland during Harald Finehair and Eric Bloodaxe's reigns. What they basically do, and if you start reading the sagas, we see this a lot actually, what they're basically doing is that they're appropriating the land of especially those landholders up in the central northern area of Norway. This is where so many of the magnates who go to Iceland, they come from. They come from that area because they're probably the ones who are getting harassed the most, because they're probably the ones who might actually be thinking that they should be king rather than this dude down there in Bergen. So that's probably what's happening here. That we have like this, he starts the process of unifying Norway. I don't think he actually ever managed to unify Norway in the sense that we think about it as like a kingdom, but he's definitely getting there. And this gets more and more intense. And yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things is that Norway is the first Scandinavian country to get a unified law, Jarlsida, in 1272. Where you know Norway gets a law for the entire country. This doesn't happen in Denmark until like the 1660s. So several hundred years later. Yeah, because in Denmark, the king still formally has to go to Viborg and to Ringsted and to Lund in the different parts of the country to get elected as king. And it's only when Denmark really loses the parts of the kingdom that are now southern Sweden, that they then start reforming the law in the more like broader legal sense, and then it becomes an absolutist kingdom instead, where the king is like, fuck the aristocracy, I don't need to think about that. So yeah, no, there's these are interesting processes, but definitely Norway is definitely a unified kingdom once you have like a single law. And it was also before then, but I don't think it happens in 870. I think it happens more like as a gradual process throughout the 900s.
Yeah. I wonder what the law was back then. Like what was morally permissible to do?
Yeah. So, I mean, we can glean some things from the Gulathing and Frostathing laws. The local legal districts of Norway. Some of it is definitely medieval and Christian law, and some of it is definitely like inherited from the Viking Age, pre-Christian times. I would say it's actually, unfortunately, what we see nowadays is that scholars just tend to, especially if they're not legal scholars of the medieval period, they tend to sort of like just use like the medieval laws as like examples of how the Vikings would have also done things, like using mm-hmm. the Icelandic law code Graugaus for like, oh, this is probably like very similar to what the Vikings did. It's like, oh no, guys, a lot of things have happened since then. But one thing that is definitely like a pre-Christian Viking thing is the idea of outlaw and like so outlawry and expelling people, and also the feud, right? So if somebody kills your family member, then you have the right to kill him or one of their family members if you are at the same social standing in society. That's definitely a pre-Christian Viking thing. Because this is what the church is really busy getting rid of in like the 1100s and 1200s in Scandinavia. Also elsewhere in Europe, like they have similar problems in northern Italy, where they also have a feud system. So that's definitely a very old element of the law that's still in place in the medieval period to some extent.
I feel like I heard once that you could kill somebody for taking off your hat. Now, is that true, or is that somebody just made that up and told me that, and he's kind of stuck?
So this is a system that is based off of the idea that you as a person, you cannot be physically violated. That's the point here. If you are a free man in this society, and you have done nothing to warrant that you are physically violated, then you have the right to exact retribution if somebody does physically violate you, right? So what we are seeing in some cases, I think there's like an instance of some guy who hits another guy over the head with a spoon. They're like eating porridge. And then he's like, well, fuck you, smack. And that results in honor killing, because that's like, that's way over the line. But you can even also like symbolically violate people. So for instance, you can compose a poem about how this guy got fucked in the ass by this guy. And that right there is a cause for, you know, violent retribution, because that would then, that again, basically what it says is that you were, as a man, violated physically by another man. Okay. which
so it's like slander almost.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're slandering someone's name.
Yeah, but there's like different levels of it. Like you can, there's like some permissible slander, but you know, saying, you know, this particular thing that somebody got, well, rear-ended. Yeah, that's a cause for violence,
okay,
and outlawry.
Sounds like a bunch of snowflakes, actually.
They were pretty much snowflakes, to be honest.
This is how we are now, almost.
Yeah. That's it, yeah. Yeah.
No, I say you're totally right, man. Like what we're seeing is like a bunch of dudes who are so very afraid of like some other guy saying, oh, this guy's gay. And it's like, really? That's your problem? Like, come on, man.
it sounds like it's very much like just a masculinity thing, isn't it? Just you don't dare like disrespect me or test, like question my ability as a man, almost.
Well, it's insecure men though, right? Like it's, mm-hmm, you know, like men who know what they're doing and what their abilities are, they, I guess they're a little more like, well, fuck this little loser sitting over there talking shit about me. I don't care.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it might have been a little bit different back then, though, I guess, with, I assume, like, your name meant a lot more necessarily than it does today. You know, the respect attached to somebody's name went a long way.
Well, obviously, there is one thing to take into consideration, and that is we have no centralized authority that makes sure that people are free from, you know, crimes committed against them. Right. In the sense that nowadays we have a police that is at least there in principle to make sure that, you know, if somebody robs my house, there's going to be a legal process. The person is going to be found and go to court and all that stuff. And then I get, you know, some kind of retribution out of that. That doesn't exist back then. Like it was all entirely up to you as an individual, especially in Iceland. A little less so in the rest of Scandinavia. And this is why I'm always like, I always try to be really adamant about the fact that Iceland was a different kind of society than the rest of Scandinavia in the Viking Age. That's why you can't just trust the sagas that talk about Vikings, regardless of whether or not they're talking about Norway or Denmark or Iceland. It's from the Icelandic perspective, and the Icelandic perspective is different. The Icelanders are a bunch of people who go to an island, and then they try to figure out how to run that island without a king. That's that's what the General Assembly is all about. And then they say, well, we have all of these laws and these things aren't permitted under the law. But they don't ever say, well, this guy is in charge of figuring out that when somebody does that, right? This guy is the policeman. They don't never do that. So that means that you're your own policeman. So you have to, you can bring a problem to the court. And say, for instance, your neighbor slandered you that way and said that you were going at it with your buddy over there in the stables. And that then it becomes a real problem for you, because if we are thinking in that mentality of like, I cannot be physically violated, that means like if somebody does that in words, it means that they can do that in like reality. And then take my shit, basically. They can come in and take my house and everything. Mm-hmm. Then you can take that to the court. The court can say, yeah, that guy needs to be outlawed. Get him out of here. Fine. But it's up to you to make sure that he fucks off. That's the problem.
Okay. So you, yeah.
There's nobody else. Like, then you have to like go to your neighbor. If you don't have enough hands on your farm to wield swords to kick him out or to kill him, then you're going to have to like go to your neighbors and see who's with you on this one, right? And they might not be that inclined. If this guy is like, you know, especially psychotic dude with a lot of, you know, sword power, then you don't have any leg to stand on, basically. So in that sense, yeah, that is a major difference between now and then. That makes it a little less snowflakey in the Viking Age, because they actually, like, you know, next step is that, you know, somebody will be raiding your farm and taking your cattle, your goods, you know, or just like, you know, the douchey things like letting their cattle graze on your land and so on, right? So yeah, they had to be a little strict about that.
Okay, so I guess you've got to, if somebody upsets you, even you might be upset, but you've got to be able to back it up. Then you've got to react out the actual punishment yourself, which isn't always easy, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's the whole problem, right? In if we go to mainland Norway, what we can see is that there's probably an attempt already in the 800-900s. Like, maybe Harald Finnhare's attempts at establishing himself as the king of all of Norway is also an attempt at creating a more centralized law. That is definitely, that's part of what these Viking Age kings are doing. The Danish king, Harald Bluetooth, who is sort of like credited with Christianizing all of Denmark, because he, you know, wrote that on a runestone. He definitely tried to do this. And he built a bunch of fortresses all over the Danish kingdom too. These fortresses were definitely there to make sure that, both to make sure that he could control all the sea routes in and out of the Danish archipelago, but also to make sure that he could control the population. So he created these centers where he could do that. This was like the precursor to the medieval towns. Not a lot of them actually worked out. Actually, my hometown is one of the only ones that worked out. That was sort of like one of his centers too. But aside from that, most of them just disappears afterwards, also because like his son grows up against him, and, you know, he ends up getting killed. And by the way, the story about how he dies is that he gets penetrated by an arrow that goes up to his ass and out of his mouth. Again, symbolic penetration in that Viking age style. There were some people who did not like him. So, yeah, no, so we see these kings trying to do this all the time, and it only really succeeds once Christianity has been established as the religion of the kingdom, and everybody sort of like falls in line here. Christianity comes with that component of like strong loyalty to an ideology rather than a family. Of course, like the family loyalty also exists throughout the Viking Age and medieval period, but it gets gradually less and less important in the structure of society. And then, you know, Christianity takes over as the main concept of loyalty. And that's also what you see with like the Norwegian kings. What they do is that they take land away from the those landholders that are me and my family and my land. Oh, well, I guess I'm going to have to go to Iceland now and do that. And then the Norwegian king, he would install his loyal subjects like as lendmen, as they're called. So that's like landed aristocracy that he's building throughout like the Viking Age and the early medieval period. Based off the idea that you're loyal to me before you're loyal to your family, and you're loyal to God because I represent God on earth because I'm king and Christian and all that stuff, right? That's how that works.
Oh, of course. Right. Let's wrap this one up. It's been fun. I feel like an arrow up the ass is a good place to.
that's a great place to stop.
I was gonna try end it straight on that, but you carried on a little bit.
Yes, I do.
That's it, Espen. Thank you very much for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Very insightful.
Oh, thanks. That's it. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, shit, it was fun.
Yeah. And I think your work is really interesting. I've become a fan very quickly.
Thanks, man. It isn't exactly 100% authentic. I get a little bit of hate for that, but I mean,
don't worry about that.
Fuck that.
Yeah, fuck that. You know, there's only one kind of people I scold for not being historically accurate, and that's my colleagues. I feel like if you're creating cool modern Viking products, I think, you know, there's no reason to get all uppity about authenticity in that way.
Because, you know, Vikings didn't have bear oil, right?
Hey, they might have.
They might have.
Who knows? Espen, is there anything you want to sort of plug, shout out, your Instagram, anything like that?
You already did that. Pilot Viking. If people want to check out this dog we talked about, that is Fenris, the Viking dog. That's it.
It's a very popular dog.
Very popular dog.
Definitely going to start following your dog, man.
For sure.
Yeah, it's a cool dog, for sure.
Matthias, where can everybody find you?
Well, you can always find me by my name on Instagram, Matthias Nordvink. You can find the Nordic Mythology channel as its own page on Facebook. And yeah, also visit my website, nordicmythologychannel.com, where I post blog posts once in a while and, you know, have a little bit of information for people who are interested in Nordic mythology and those kinds of things. I have been getting a couple of questions lately about my YouTube channel because I've basically, you know, taken down most of the videos I have there. And that's because of the douchey comments. I get way too many, like you do, Espen, with like people that get offended about something, or somebody with way too many unqualified opinions, and you know,
just don't read the comments.
Well, I try to turn them off, but I'm just so sick of it, and there's like way too much work in the YouTube channel anyway. So this is a lot more fun doing the podcast.
We need to put something together with the podcast, but we'll speak about it.
Yeah,
I've got some ideas.
We'll figure that out. So, but yeah, so if you go to my YouTube channel, you're not going to find much there, except for an interview with Kai from Heilung and Aina from Wardruna. So there you go.
I actually just heard your podcast with Einar. I listened to it when I walked Fenris this morning.
Oh, cool!
It's cool. Interesting stuff.
He's an interesting guy.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. With to be honest, I'm not a very creative person. So when you listen to all these people like Einar and how they think and to create art, is very fascinating and inspiring for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah, I'm gonna see them live in April.
Oh, cool. Oh, you can see people live now. Like, oh yeah, like one of my friends, he plays in the band Wulfas, which is like a black metal band. And they were like doing a gig in Denmark. And I was like, you guys can go to concerts? Like, I can't even go to a fucking restaurant.
Neither could we. We can't either. We can't go for food. Or
It's only Oslo that's fucked up over here. It was supposed to be in April this year, but it got canceled then because of COVID. And then hopefully, I think we could do concerts now, but it's like half the people, and you have to have like tables and shit everywhere, and so people are separated.
Oh, okay. It's not the same.
Nah.
Yeah.
That's true. But I guess Valdruna isn't the kind of music you need to stand up and headbang to. Like, fucking, it's not Gorgoroth.
That is true. It's not.
Yeah, no, that'd be cool. I might have to come over and go to that.
Yeah.
Since we can't have anything here.
If they'll let you in.
Yeah, just swim over and pick you up by the dogs.
I'll have a go. I'm not that good of a swimmer, though.
You send a drone, pick him up with a drone.
Fucking hell, how big is the drone gonna be? It'll have to be a fucking big drone. You have to get like four together.
Can you imagine how epic that would be, though?
And a little harness.
Now I'm reminded of Dumbo, with like when he's like flying with the birds, like holding him.
The imagery, not the elephant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure.
Awesome, man. Right. If anybody wants to follow me personally, it's Daniel_Farrand1 on Instagram. Obviously the business, Horns of Odin. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review. Other than that, obviously you have our Patreon, which you can support us on, helps us buy new equipment, hopefully get somebody to look after all the uploading so we can get it a little bit more regular and more on time. Yeah, we have a bunch of cool information on there, and that's just Patreon.com/Nordic Mythology Podcast. Awesome. Thank you very much, Espen.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.